Offside. Erdoganov tek čez ustavne ovire. Vse od aretacije istanbulskega župana Ekrema Imamoluja se po številnih turških mestih, med drugim v Istanbulu, Ankari in Izmirju, odvija serija protivladnih protestov, ki jih Turčija ni doživela že vse od demonstracij v parku Gezi leta 2013. Turška policija je Imamoluja, obtoženega korupcije in terorističnih povezav, skupaj s 100 drugimi osebami pridržala prejšnji teden. Istanbulski župan je sicer predsedniški kandidat republikanske stranke, krajše GHP, in glavni tekmec sedanjega predsednika Recepa Tayyipa Erdogana. Ta mu z aretacijo skuša preprečiti kandidaturo na predsedniških volitvah, ki bodo predvidoma potekale maja leta 2028. To je na ulice pognalo tako Imamolujeve podpornike kot Erdoganove nasprotnike. Proteste za začetek oriše Samuele Carlo Ayrton Abrami, raziskovalec na Istanbul Policy Center.
That here the atmosphere is extremely tense and there's also a lot of uncertainty because we don't really know what to expect in the next days and in the following weeks. Since Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu's arrest on March the 19th, protests have exploded, not just here in Istanbul actually, but also across the country. Just to give you an idea of the extent to which the protests have reached now, so far more than 1,000 people have been detained in the last 5 days of protests. And this morning, for example, we woke up to news that several journalists were arrested as well, including those that were just reporting from the ground the situation about the protests. And on top of that, over 700 opposition-linked accounts have been silenced, blocked on social media and other platforms. And last night, we also saw, in my opinion, that the level of violence escalated sharply because police used water cannons, tear gas and batons to disperse the crowds. But there were more clashes than I saw in the last in the other days of the protests at the beginning.
Da bi preprečile nove proteste, so turške oblasti zaukazale 4-dnevno prepoved združevanja, omejile so tudi komunikacijo na družbenih omrežjih in v imenu nekaterih objav, ki so jih označile za provokativne, pridržale številne posameznike. Več pojasni sogovorec.
And to be honest, even though we're not officially under a state of emergency, the atmosphere strongly echoes somehow to some extent those days after the 2016 failed coup, for example, because there's police on every corner of the central city, there are bans on gatherings, tension everywhere. For example, there was also a decree that said that there might be restriction about entering and leaving Istanbul if someone is suspected to be linked or to be likely to join in the protest. And just a final remark and about something that is striking me is how broad and diverse this time the protests are somehow. Because in my opinion, it's not just about the GHP supporters. We see students, workers, we've seen lawyers, left-wing groups, central or apolitical people that have joined spontaneously somehow the protest.
Val protestniškega gibanja bi, glede na mobilizacijo prebivalstva, lahko primerjali s protesti v istanbulskem parku Gezi. Ti so se začeli zaradi nasprotovanja urbanističnemu načrtu za omenjeni park, širši odpor pa se je začel potem, ko je policija protestnike nasilno razgnala. Kljub temu so med gibanjem leta 2013 in trenutnimi protesti razlike, pojasnjuje Ayrton.
And although people are making comparisons, to my knowledge, it feels different somehow from the Gezi protest of 2013. Because while a decade ago, people still had a decent lifestyle and protests were more urban-centered, now I feel that they are more widespread and more rooted in daily frustrations, right? Because it's still political, of course, but it's also about a collapsing economy, rising hopelessness of especially of the youth and the feeling that people are basically silenced by the regime, an increasingly autocraticizing regime. And people somehow are walking some sort of a fine line between fear and defense, right? And this isn't just about one arrest. This isn't just about Imamoglu, I feel. These protests are somehow a response to 20 years of authoritarianism, a judiciary that feels politicized, and a public growing increasingly tired, basically, of being ignored.
Imamoglu se je takoj po aretaciji na očitke odzval, da gre za politično motivirano pridržanje. To sicer ni prvi Erdoganov poskus, da bi Imamoluju preprečil kandidaturo. Pred dvema tednoma mu je vodstvo univerze v Istanbulu razveljavilo diplomo, ki je po turški zakonodaji pogoj za legitimno kandidaturo na volitvah. Uradni razlog za razveljavitev je bil sum nepravilnosti pri prepisu z zasebne univerze na Severnem Cipru na turško fakulteto za upravo. Več pojasni sogovorec.
Imamoglu's claim that the arrest is politically motivated isn't just rhetoric, evidently, as you said. It's backed by a clear pattern of judicial harassment and impositions by the state. And also the strategic timing of these moves by the government, I think, are quite telling about the situation. Because, for example, the sequence of events strongly suggests that the government is trying to block Imamoglu's presidential candidacy for 2028 scheduled elections for now by weaponizing all the state institutions that now the government is controlling. And let's not forget also that this isn't the first attempt to sideline Imamoglu himself, because after his initial victory in the 2019 municipal elections, for example, the vote was annulled under dubious pretext, right? And only for him to return, actually, with an even stronger mandate. But then again, in 2022, he was sentenced for insulting public officials. And now, 2025, we see not just his arrest, actually, but also the sudden annulment of his university degree, which would be constitutionally actually enough to prevent him from running for presidency.
Erdogan je na vrhu turške oblasti že zadnjih 22 let. Najprej kot predsednik vlade od leta 2003 pa vse do 2014, ko se je presedel na stolček predsednika države. Toda zdaj zaprti istanbulski župan ni edina ovira, temveč tudi ustavna omejitev mandatov.
Because in 2017 then 18 constitutional amendments mark basically they marked a radical restructuring of Turkey's political system. And basically a transition from a parliamentary democracy to an executive centralized presidential regime. Erdogan's victory in that referendum granted him sweeping powers because the prime minister's office was abolished and parliamentary oversight was weakened. And then in the end, the president gained unilateral authority to appoint ministers, dissolve the parliament, but also to shape the judiciary nowadays. And officially, as you were mentioning, the constitution would allow only two five-year presidential terms, which would make today Erdogan ineligible to run again in 2028. However, a loophole permits a third run if early elections are called by parliament during a president's second term. But also, we're talking about another alternative because Erdogan's ally have begun floating the idea of a new constitutional amendment, as you mentioned, that would formally remove the term limits altogether to some extent. But actually, to pass such a change, Erdogan needs to build political alliances beyond his actual coalition nowadays.
Kako bi se Erdogan lahko znebil ustavnih ovir do še enega predsedniškega mandata, pojasni Alp Kayserilioğlu, politolog in marksistični zgodovinar za Turčijo.
He wants to evade this potential of two rounds of elections, and since quite some time he openly declares that he wants to change the constitution also in the sense that it does not matter if anybody has more than 50% of the valid vote in the first round, as long as the presidential candidate has the strongest voting turnout. So that he could also win with, let's say, 45% of the valid votes.
Še en dokaz, da je aretacija politično motivirana, je obtožba o povezovanju Imamoluja s terorističnimi organizacijami, s čimer oblasti ciljajo na povezovanje z delavsko stranko Kurdistana, krajše PKK. To turške oblasti namreč uvrščajo na seznam terorističnih organizacij. PKK je sicer v začetku marca po več kot 40 let trajajočem konfliktu s Turčijo razglasila enostransko prekinitev ognja na pobudo vodje Abdullaha Öcalana.
And this is where the Kurdish issue and the Dem party, the pro-Kurdish Dem party, come into play. Because we've seen in recent times Abdullah Öcalan, the leader of the PKK party, the Kurdistan Workers Party, that issued a call for the movement to lay down arms. And some observers actually believe that Erdogan could exploit this moment to restart a version of a peace process, and in exchange, he would ask Dem party, the pro-Kurdish Dem party, to support him to amend the constitution. However, we're not sure about where the Dem party stay nowadays, because I think the pro-Kurdish party now is in front of a dilemma, because rhetorically, we've seen in the first days the Dem party supporting Özgür Özel and all the JP and, of course, İmamoğlu. But then in the last 2 days, we've also seen some critical voices about Özgür Özel nationalist stance. And so this might actually split somehow the opposition in this very critical context.
Kakšne bonitete bi si Erdogan lahko obetal od kurdskega dela prebivalstva na prihodnjih predsedniških volitvah, pojasnjuje Kayser İlyoğlu.
He also calculates that he can win, or he will try to win over the Kurds for voting together with his ruling coalition parties towards a constitutional amendment which would make these, as I told you a couple of minutes ago, these amendments to the presidential election law possible.
Erdogan pojasnjuje, da aretacije ali odstavitev županov oziroma napadi na prepoznavnejše osebe in ne na stranko kot celoto niso nekaj novega. V Turčiji namreč ogromen del politike temelji prav na vidnejših osebnostih.
Yeah, I would say from an historical perspective in Turkey, political legitimacy and popular appeal have always been heavily personalized. Because they were often revolving around strong, charismatic figures in a way that there is a strong idiosyncrasy between the man and the party. From the founder of the Republic, Atatürk, and also leaders like Adnan Menderes in the 50s, then Turgut Özal in the 80s, but even leaders like the Turkish Iron Lady Tansu Çiller in the 90s, Turkish politics has long relied on the power of personal narratives and symbolic leadership. But I would say that no one has taken this personalization of power further than Recep Tayyip Erdogan, today's president, because under his rule, the cult of personality has not only dominated the political sphere, but has also reshaped the institutions of the state, the way in which the Turkish Republic is conceived. And this isn't just about media control or public image, in my opinion. It's also about somehow embedding a personal vision into the education system, the judiciary, foreign policy, a way of making policies, and the broader cultural narrative, right, of appealing to a more pious, conservative, nationalist, nativist Turkey.
Kult osebnosti je kakopak najbolj viden prav pri predsedniku Erdoganu, pojasnjuje sogovorec.
In Erdogan's case, the leader and the state have become almost undistinguishable, right? This personalized model also affects electoral dynamics, of course. And for example, in 2023, the general elections, while his party experienced a noticeable decline, that is a process actually that has been ongoing in the last 3, 4, 5 years, Erdogan himself maintained a relatively strong base of support for his figure as president.
Začetni protesti, ki jih je sprožila aretacija Ekrema İmamoğlu-ja, so prerasli v širšo vstajo, vendar do predsedniških volitev je še daleč. Vajeti pa v rokah še vedno drži Erdogan, ki se na vsak način želi obdržati na prestolu. Offside sta pripravili Vajenka Izabela in Tija.